This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Additional protests are planned today in Detroit and elsewhere in the wake of explosive uses of police force against African Americans in Minnesota and in Southeast Michigan. The death of George Floyd of Minneapolis in police custody has ignited feelings on the national stage after video surfaced of an officer with his knee on Floyd's neck before his death. Another video showing a Washtenaw County deputy repeatedly punching Shatina Grady L. in the head when she refused to leave the scene of a shooting recently brought home the truth that African-American Michiganders know all too well, that justice is systematically applied in different ways, and that Black lives are not always valued equally. Joining us today are Alford A. Young, professor of sociology at the University of Michigan. He's also associate director of the U of M's Center for Social Solutions. He's coming to us from his home in Ann Arbor. Professor Young, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Tracy Braim is with us as well. She's a professor and associate dean at Western Michigan University's Cooley Law School, Grand Rapids campus, and she is in Grand Rapids today. Professor Braim, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
I have a question I'd like to ask both of you starting out. When you look at images of the protests in Minneapolis, what do you see? Tracy, you worked as a public defender in both Detroit and Washington, D.C. May I start with you?
Absolutely. So I came of age. I was actually at University of Michigan as an undergraduate student when Rodney King was beaten by officers out in L.A., and I remember the riots that followed and the images that I saw in Minnesota and elsewhere kind of brought me back mentally to that time. And it was, you know, gut-wrenching for obvious reasons, but you know, not the least of which is that, you know, 30 years later, we're facing the same issues. So it was tough.
Al, what about you? When you're viewing what's happening a few states over, what comes up for you?
Well, it seems like here we go again. And that, I think, is a sentiment not just of people in Michigan, but across the country. There's a real strong connection to that situation, because even though it's happening there, it seems like what we've seen so often in so many other parts of the United States.
Yeah. Al, you published a book last year about African-American communities in Ypsilanti. When people see images of a Black woman getting punched in the face by a sheriff's deputy, what informs how citizens digest what they're seeing? What are some of the broader issues in history that might be on their minds?
Well, in the first case, it's this continued living a contradiction. And on the one hand, people, Black people too, want to see the police, want to see law enforcement as servants of the public interest. Yet people feel, particularly Black people, feel threatened by the police and law enforcement when they come into communities, assault people, punch people. I mean, it's clear that all kinds of people get angry around issues. We're seeing that in some other kinds of protests in the country, including our state capital in Michigan. But the response to be assaulted by the kinds of people you expect to protect and serve you is what just heightens anger and frustration.
It feels like this pattern that recurs again and again begins with outrage and media attention. In recent years, we've seen more incidents of officers being arrested, sometimes charged, sometimes even disciplined. But there have been actually very few convictions. Tracy, can you provide a little context about what's happening inside the justice system? That even though police departments have been going through different forms of training, even though there has been heightened scrutiny on these incidents, why is it, in your view, that the pattern is recurring?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on. And I think, you know, Dr. Young put it well. There's this expectation that law enforcement is there to serve, to protect, to investigate, to solve crimes, et cetera. So I think that there's a certain credibility that officers receive that they have to have, right, in order to do their jobs. And sometimes that gets in the way of discipline and prosecution, even in the most heinous cases. But more fundamentally, I think that these most recent cases and the ones that, you know, seem to keep coming up monthly, yearly, you know, what have you, in which white officers are seeing using excessive force against people of color, it is an outgrowth of, you know, the centuries of racism and discrimination and lack of respect for Black life. And, you know, I'm teaching a class. I teach a class at the law school called Race in the Supreme Court, where we look at how the legal system has dealt with issues of race going all the way back, right, to slavery times, and how the courts have dealt, you know, have grappled with how formerly enslaved people now coexist with the people that enslaved them. And needless to say, it's been a bumpy road, but the legal system has been able to patch together a system where there are at least laws in place to react to things like this, right? There's laws in place stating, you know, that people shouldn't be discriminated against on the basis of race or gender or sexual orientation, that, you know, everybody has a right, equal right to housing, equal right to vote, et cetera. But there's only so much that the law can do, right? So, you know, we can prosecute these officers, and I hope we do. I hope that they're disciplined. You know, I hope that the truth comes to light, et cetera. But the law can't touch, unfortunately, that fundamental problem of the lack of respect that our country still has for people of color and the like. George Floyd automatically seen, you know, as dangerous criminals to be subdued.
Tracy, it seems like one of the main legal points of conflict, although, you know, these cases never come head to head with each other, has to do with the fact that court precedent tells police officers that if they feel endangered, that is the basis for making decisions on use of force. Why do you think it is that the courts have, you know, the public has clearly reacted to seeing use of force being used in ways that we can agree are excessive again and again? Why is it that the courts have not recognized that?
Well, again, you know, there has to be a standard, because, like I stated before, police officers have to have a certain amount of discretion and perspective in order to do their jobs, right? And if they do feel as though they're in danger, they have to be able to neutralize, right, have the room to neutralize that danger and in any given situation. Again, the problem is, and I'm not sure that it's one for the courts to solve, and I'm sure Dr. Young can speak to this, the problem is the context in which people feel as though they're in danger, right? And it takes a lot less for police officers to feel endangered by a black suspect than by other people, right? And I think, you know, we saw even a more innocuous yet troubling example in Central Park, you know, earlier this week, you know, where a woman was confronted by
Amy Cooper. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, he was bird watching and asked her to leash her dog, and, you know, she confronts him about it. And one of the first things she does is says, "If you don't leave me alone, I'm going to call the police and tell them that there's an African-American man threatening me." And she says that. She knows exactly what she's doing. She does it purposefully because she knows that that will get a reaction, that there's something about saying that there's an African-American man threatening me somehow heightens the danger, right? And again, I think that many police officers feel the same way, either consciously or subconsciously. And if we don't deal with that, then we're going to be faced with the same situation over and over again, where somebody gets hurt or killed, and the police officer's response is, "Well, I thought I was in danger," right? No matter how, you know, even if it was, you know, some man that was alleged to pass a counterfeit $20 bill, right? You know what I mean? We certainly have to address it judicially, but there's a lot of extrajudicial work that we need to do.
If you're just joining us, our guests today are Tracy Brame, Associate Dean of Western Michigan University's Cooley Law School in Grand Rapids, and Professor Al Young of the University of Michigan School of Sociology. Al, the context of what's happening right now in the country with a pandemic is just really, I don't know, it feels striking to me at a time when African-American communities in Michigan and elsewhere have absorbed a disproportionate share of the infection rates, of the death rates. Do you think that adds to the frustration that we're seeing in some of the protests?
Well, it certainly does, because all of the protests, irrespective of a focus on people coming to Lansing to protest stay at home, or Black Americans protesting the abuse that they're suffering at the hands of white people, all of these are about claims around citizenship. And for Black Americans, particularly around COVID and the heightened effect that this has had on the Black community, the response has been, are we cared about? Are resources being brought to bear to address this issue? Are we getting government and societal responses that one would expect a citizen should have? At the same time, the other people that feel that their rights as citizens enable them to take guns to state capitals or speak out aggressively over and against government-supported policies, right? The stay-at-home orders, what have you. in their case, it's almost as if the citizenship is being taken for granted. I can act in this way because I'm duly obligated to do so as a citizen. Whereas for African Americans, unfortunately, the protest activity, a strong claim for recognition as citizens, a strong claim that legal authorities, health and healthcare systems should engage Black folks as American citizens. So the protests, as far as Black Americans are concerned, are about claims to be recognized as appropriate citizens, not simply acting on one citizenship, as is the case for people in Lansing and the others who are going to state capitals with guns in hand.
Just to dive into the deeper history for a moment, Black communities across the country have been protesting excessive use of force for decades. I mean, here in Michigan, the Detroit Uprising of 1967 was, you know, a sort of a standard for the anger and outrage of the Black community. Do you think anything has truly changed coming out of those events as we look back to 1967 and now to 2020? Al, could you start?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, some things haven't changed. What has changed is the use of technology, the fact that at any point in time, documentation of abuse can unfold and we can see images of what's going on, has been a radical change. So there are people that would not believe that Black Americans have been subjected to certain kinds of abuse that are seeing consistent reminders that that abuse unfolds. I think, unfortunately, what has not changed, but as evident by some of the recent cases, has gotten more severe, is that there has been for years this lingering notion that, well, if African Americans don't deserve this, then they're doing things or acting in ways that invite this, right? So we always hear the stories of the personal histories of Trayvon Martin or the personal histories of Rodney King, or stories that tell us that people were violating the law or doing things that didn't make them appear to be just and proper, and then trying to tie that to why these moments of abuse have unfolded. Yet, in some of our contemporary examples, I mean, we've got a Black man trying to watch birds. The very social functioning of Black folks contemporarily really flies in the face of this historic pattern of trying to say, well, that person may have been up to no good at some time, therefore, there's some justification for the abuse that happened when it did.
Yes.
Tracy, it's gotten worse today. It's gotten worse.
Tracy Brame, do you think we can honestly say that the country has moved forward?
No, I have to agree with Al. And, you know, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, certainly we made strides in some area. I was born in 1970, just after the riots in Detroit. And thanks to the hard work of my parents and a lot of other people, I've been able, you know, to go to college, to go to law school, become a lawyer, et cetera. But that's always been true for some of us, right? The vast majority, though, at least too many people, let me put it that way, too many people in the Black community just still, all these years later, don't have those opportunities. So to take it back to what Al said about, you know, fighting to be treated as citizens, that's been the case from the very beginning, right? From the founding of our nation, that, you know, people of African descent were not considered citizens and had to literally fight for a 14th Amendment to even be considered equal citizens of this country. And that journey, right, still lingers. And so, you know, I'll go back to what I said before, unless and until, right? And you can even take all the pictures you want, right? You know, like I said, we do have more media now, more contemporaneous in the moment views of what's happening. But until we reckon with the underlying reasons that it's happening, it's just not going to change. Because as Al said, people are going to try to excuse it away, right? Even when we whittle down to bird watching, you know, they're going to try to, you know, to find some justification for what happened that absolves, you know, the perpetrators of guilt. And they're hard conversations, right? Like sometimes when I try to talk to my white contemporaries, it's not an easy conversation. People don't want to, you know, have these kind of victim aggressor type of conversations and be made to feel guilty and be made to feel uncomfortable and all those kind of things. But I believe that it's a necessary and essential step to move forward. To say, you know what? You know, I understand that these years of discrimination and terror, you know, faced by these communities, I understand the protests and they're going to keep happening because you mentioned it at the top when you said that something major will happen and there'll be protests and everybody be angry and then we'll move on.
Yeah.
And then it happens again, right? You know what I mean? And it just becomes this cycle and it'll continue to be that way unless somewhere along the way we can establish a sustained commitment, right, to you know, not only to being reactionary when this happens, but to be proactive in actually improving the state of relations between people in the country and the state of being of African Americans.
Al, you brought up the fact that a few weeks ago, hundreds of protesters came to Lansing, almost exclusively white protesters, to make their voices heard about mobility and freedom with guns at hand. What happens when Black citizens demand the same?
Oh, boy. I don't want to imagine what happens. We already see in the reaction to the violence that unfolded in Minneapolis, you know, what happens around protests. So most Black Americans that I've talked to, and I've had a lot of conversations around the Lansing protests and similar activities, were just in awe of the fact that people could comfortably show up with guns when they themselves felt just showing up would be the source of a problem. Showing up with picket sign in hand, showing up with one's body would be enough to invite a hostile reaction. So there's just an extreme response to just how very different we stand in this country around what we think we're entitled to do, how we think we can act and operate in public space, and what we imagine will be the consequences for doing so.
Tracy, we just have maybe a little more than a minute left here. Do you have thoughts on why, with the officer in Minneapolis, justice is systematically applied in different ways?
Probably the same reason as always. The prosecutor's office wants to take it slow, wants to gather evidence, et cetera. I will tell you that one of the things that I'm seeing here is that varying people at different stages of law enforcement are calling this a murder already, right, which is something that you don't always see, that usually there's a can't rush to judgment, we got to see the other side, et cetera. And while the county attorney...
Including Police Chief James Craig.
Exactly. So while the county prosecutor attorney is trying to, hopefully, right, trying to build his case, right, and making sure that they have a good case going forward, because we saw what happened, with Freddie Gray, how that unraveled, trying to make sure that he has an airtight case, already from the Justice Department on down, right, from the AG in Minnesota on down, people are recognizing this for what it was, right, you know what I mean,
yeah.
Which is the unlawful taking of life, of a human life. And so I have seen more calls for arrest from more quarters than usual, but it's not uncommon, you know, particularly when police officers are involved because of the standards around excessive force and, you know, and the investigation that's needed. They were fired right away, which, again, you know, they skipped administrative leave and internal affairs and all that and just fired them. So
right.
There is some movement there. But I hope that this is a tipping point because I just, you know, the community just can't keep taking this. I don't know what to say. I have a 13-year-old son who'll be 14 in July, and every time this happens, the older he gets, the more scared I get. Just, you know, hoping that by the time he's an adult, you know, that he doesn't have to, got to worry about walking down the wrong street. So,
Tracy Brame is Associate Dean of Western Michigan University's Cooley Law School in Grand Rapids. We've also been talking with Professor Alfred Young of the Sociology Department at the University of Michigan. Thank you both so much for taking some time with us today, and we're wishing you both a safe weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure.